being on subject is pet facilitated therapy. And to give you some introduction to it, although I had observed animals most of my life, I had the impact of pet facilitated therapy brought home to me in a very special way when I was working at Henson Laboratories in Richmond, Washington. Our son, who is now 32, was then 6 or 7, so that would be 26 years ago. And he was very ill. And he hardly lifted his head from his pillow. And we weren't sure what it was. We were pretty sure it wasn't that he didn't want to go to school, because he was very fond of school and his first grade teacher. And I was bicycling also in those days. And the bus terminal where I got a bus to back and forth to the work area, I was about 2 miles from home. And on this particular evening, I hopped on the bike and started home. And my friend Wayne Hansen saw me as he was driving by in his Dodge. He pulled a screeching halt and says, "Hey, I got a cat for you." And he really did. He had a little back seat of his car filled with cats. His wife had finally said, "That's the end. You're going to take these cats to the dog, to the pound." And he says, "Some of these I don't mind taking to the pound, but this one, I just can't stand take her to the pound, or him to the pound. And you gotta take him home for the kit." Well, I says, all I got is this paper sack that I carried. And I was brown bagging it in those days. I still do. I had a paper sack in my bag. I was recycling. And I pulled out the sack, put Shag in there, kind of a blue Russian or sort of Russian blue type cat. Put him in my sack, kitten, and tore on for home. And got home and went into Buzzy's room, and he was laying there like this was his last day on earth. And I let the cat loose on his bed. And he was in school the next noon, so they fully recovered. And the cat had a home for itself, a happy home for the next 16 years. I thought there must be something good in it, but I didn't really get to doing much about it until the recent past. But I have had a continuing interest in it, and it is a result of some of these experiences and the experiences of some of my associates that I will discuss with you tonight. I'll have a few slides, and then we'll have a break, and then I'll give some more slides on and give you some recommendations. So with that, I'll turn off the lights. First, I'll turn this on B. Zig is coaching me well. And this is the announced subject. The name is Sigmund, and the bill is $60 an hour, and the dog has a person on the couch. And I thought this was only in the recent past that we had this great interest in it. However, in my travels, I have found quite a few places where pets have been utilized for quite a time in therapy. That is, assisted in many situations with disturbed children, with older people, and these kind of situations. I had this poignantly emphasized last October when I visited Beto. Some of you were here during my presentation on my visit to Beto in Bielefeld, Germany. One of my interests in going to Beto was their use of pets in therapy, which was indicated in the remarkable book, Bright Valley of Love by Edna Hall. And I did visit there, and I noticed that there were a lot of dogs and cats there. Most recently, they have brought in Welsh ponies to be utilized for epileptics and others. This is very useful for balance and helping in balance for people that have had this lack, and it's been especially useful for epileptics. And they also have a lot of birds there, and also wild animals in the wild animal park. I asked them how long they had been using cats and dogs. They started to think about it, and they finally said, well, I guess ever since we started. And I already knew that they had started in 1867, which was some 111 years ago. this is another one. When things start appearing in cartoons, you know it's important. You know it's getting to you. There's a great interest in animals today. I remember now we decided last fall we couldn't afford both a distemper shot for the dog and a flu shot for you. And this is about the way it is. We who are veterinarians, and Dr. Wersinski can back me up on this. He's here today and he's seen a lot more patients than all I have. But I'll give you a few examples of this. A friend of mine, a clinician in the mid-state of Washington, one day a lady came in and she wanted something done with her dog. It was a very involved operation. The dog had, as I recall, mammary carcinoma, and it was extensive surgery, and the chances weren't that good. The price was $125. He told her this, and she said, well, he said, that's quite a bit, but I was going to get a new pair of glasses, but you go ahead with the operation. On another day, a person came in carrying a dog that had been run over by a truck on the interstate highway. He had probably driven about 30 miles to find this person and brought in this dog that had about every bone in its frame broken. And the clinician examined it very carefully, took a lot of x-rays, and said that he might have a chance of pulling it through, but the bill would probably be at least $300. Well, he says, I want it fixed up. And the veterinarian said, well, we usually, for our clients who we do not know, we usually require a substantial down payment. He said, well, here's $100, and I'll be in tomorrow with the other $200. Well, here is a fellow, he didn't even belong to the dog. He was driving, he was a lumberjack. He was driving along interstate and saw this dog, and he wanted it fixed up. Today, if there's a question of finances, and you have limited finances, and the dog gets sick and the mother-in-law gets sick, there's no question of who goes to the doctor. even the parent, like in this case, the father and the mother. And I know several cases where if the child is even sicker than the dog, the parents look over the child and say, well, that's the same thing as he had 6 months ago. But the dog and cat get sick, it's off to the veterinarian. And this is the situation today. I'm not necessarily defending it, but this is the kind of an environment we have. And 19 years old, and he still loves chasing cars. Well, this is how we operate. Show them your care. The amount of money going into this today is fantastic. The laws and the sentiment for society, for the protection of animals, I'm sure far exceeds that for the protection of cruelty to children. In fact, one of the larger humane societies now, after having spent a lot of money in many years on protecting cruelty to animals, have now also formed a branch that protects the cruelty to children, since they feel that this is also very important.
Were they up for parents?
Pardon? No, they haven't gotten the parents yet. You see things like this where it's share and share alike. You see cartoons like that. The fellow, they're going home with a doggy bag and they get held up. And to point out that among the animals utilized, these are usually the two favorites. Although this is not necessarily the best ones in some situations. And towards the end of the lecture, I'll discuss what I think are some of the best pets. Not to say that these aren't great, depending on the situation, and you'll have to carefully select them, but I'll have something to say about that, and if I don't, you remind me. But it's pretty hard to resist them, and they also teach us a very great deal. One of the great men of medicine in this country is George Harold. He's retired now. He helped start the medical school at Florida, and then he started the one at Hershey, Pennsylvania, and retired as the provost for medical sciences there, as a distinguished man of medicine. He was one of the great promoters for utilizing animals for teaching in human medicine. And one of his chief concerns in this regard was to teach them sensitivity towards animals and one another. He wanted compassion in them, and he felt that this was one of the best ways to teach compassion. And I should also point out, as I pointed out to some of you the other night, that we can learn much from animals, and I've observed a lot of mother dogs and their performance around pups. At one time, I was the chief beagler for 1,200 beagles, and that's 12 tons. And so I've watched a lot of them. And I have observed that mother dogs gentle and caress their dogs, their puppies, 9 times more than they growl or snap at them. I've also watched a lot of young mothers and their children, and the reverse is true. They usually growl and bite at them 9 times more than they gentle them. And I think the dog has been, in many cases, a more successful in child rearing. Perhaps we can learn something by emulation. This is one of the early utilizations as far as publicity goes. This happens to be a hospital situation. Here is a child, and he is receiving his therapy from this little rabbit. And I have been a long time promoter, hopefully, that hospitals would, if not make animals available to their patients to handle, that they, at least in the children's ward, have young pups, rabbits, and cats, or whatever it might be, that are visible to them, and I think they would find that the recovery would be much more rapid, and they would be much easier to get along with, and be much happier. And then among the older people, I mentioned this lady the other night. Her name is Marjorie Grinnell, and this is the dog Bruce. Now, what happened to Marjorie Grinnell was that she had had Airedale dogs all her life, and finally her last Airedale died from old age. And her physician said, because you are very lame, and you have a sore back, and you have to walk with a cane, it would be hazardous for you to get a dog, because he might push you over something. And so she respected his recommendations, and continued deteriorating. And she was going down the tubes. Fortunately, she saw an old friend of hers, a physician, who said, what you ought to do, Marjorie, is to go out and get yourself a big dog. And she went out and got Bruce. Bruce was in the local Humane Society in San Francisco. And it's a golden retriever. Now, if you know golden retrievers, if I went to Marjorie's house tonight and I opened the door, old Bruce would be all over me. He'd be underfoot all the time. I'd have to be very careful about getting tripped. But not with Marjorie. He bounces around with everybody. But with Marjorie, he is very, very gentle. He never gets in her way. He just walks sort of close to her when she sits down, and he puts, this is where he often puts his head. And then at night when the lights go out, she has a single bed. And Bruce is 80 pounds is on one side of her, and Coco, her cat, is on the other side. And her condition is improved tremendously. She's back to her old self again. She spent, I suppose, about 15 or 20 years of her life selecting the puppies to be utilized in the seeing dog program. And I also use that to remind me, since I do not have a slide on the hearing dog program, I wanted to tell you a little bit about that. It was, I think, in Minnesota many years ago, a lady who was deaf, and there are about close to 2 million people in this country who are deaf today, and really out of it in many ways. And this lady was one of them, and she had a dog that was trained to be her ears. The dog was the one that heard the doorbell. She heard the phone, and if there was an emergency, the dog would be there. She'd look out for cars and the noise on cars, and just a lot of things. And when the dog died, she was essentially helpless. And so she went to the Humane Society, I think in Minneapolis, and said, I need a hearing dog. Well, that got them going on it. And now there are several agencies who have initiated this. I have tried to get one going in the Humane Society Hospital in California. It's at a standstill now, but we still hope that it will go. We feel that many of these agencies could be developed to select the dogs and to bring the future owners in, get them trained to the dog. They can also be very useful for young mothers who have babies, who let them know when they cry. I think it has a great promise. This should also serve to point out their utilization with older people. And I'll have more to say about this later when I tell you about Dr. Corson and his work. I think that, and in fact I know, that many people remain independent far longer if they have a pet. They can be independent in their own homes. And what you observe is that they take better care of themselves, they have the responsibility for a pet who is also a source of great comfort to them. They're also a source of security then. And they're also a point of departure for discussion with other people. They take them for walks, they meet other people, so they then are in communication with more people. They have more things in common with them. And as I mentioned, they take better care of themselves and they also probably eat better. And just on a cost-benefit analysis, you'd probably find that it would be even worth subsidizing these for the benefit of people. And then what do we do? We take a lot of the old people out of their situation from their farm or something. They've had pets all their life, and when they're unable to take care of themselves or have selected to go to a retirement home, they take them to sterile retirement homes where they have taken away from them about the only thing that at that stage in life gives them unconditional love, and so they die. In our own case, I remember when the chief's mother was in a convalescent home in Pullman, which she chose to be in, Chief would take Charlie over there. Now, Charlie wasn't allowed to go into the place, come running in, although he did it a couple of times. The Chief would then carry him in, and the patients in this convalescent home, it was as if it were lodestone. Many of the patients seeing Charlie would come just running to Charlie and want to rub Charlie, pet Charlie. It was just a hunger that just made you cry. They finally said, you can't bring Charlie in here anymore. And we have these rules, which I'll go into in a little while. And I've had some really sad experiences in this and almost pleased for me, can't you do something about this? To change the rules so that you can allow pets in some of these places. We did place some, Idaho has, they're more enlightened on this, so we did place some cats in a retirement home in Moscow, Idaho, some kittens with a good success. Let me see what the next slide is. I got going on this thing. We changed our order in our lecture, so I just threw in some slides here. Before I do that, I think that I was one of the first people to get into this was a fellow named Boris Levinson. Boris Levinson is a clinical pathologist. He's with Albert Einstein University, or Yeshiva University. It's a medical school, I think, in New York. And many, many years ago, he became interested in this, and it was a mistake. He had a dog that he had in his business office, but not where he saw the patients. He'd always have the door, or if he had him in his office, he'd always have him removed when any patients came in. And one day, a lady brought her son in unannounced. This child had been a patient of his for quite some time, but they came in unannounced, and he had the dog there. He hadn't gotten anywhere with his patients. It was an incorrigible little chap, and that was just getting nowhere, and he was beside himself as to what he was going to do. And on this particular day, they came in unannounced, and the dog sort of welcomed them, and this little boy thought this dog was really okay. In fact, they set up communication almost immediately, and the mother was going to intervene, and Dr. Levinson says, let him be. And that's when he started this out. And to make a long story short on him, because of this dog, he was able to get to the child and to an extent, I guess, the mother, and it had a happy ending. And as a result of this, he began bringing pets into therapy with many of his patients with great success. But he never did any in real systematic studies. And some of the most systematic studies were started by Elizabeth and Sam Corson at the psychiatric hospital at Ohio State University some years ago. And Sam's a biophysicist. He was born in Russia. He was in jail in Russia at the age of 13. He got out of Russia fairly early and worked his way through, I think, the University of Pennsylvania. He was at Yale for a while and ended up at Ohio State University. And he was interested in some pretty sophisticated experimentation in the biophysical area, and also in neurophysiology, because he is a neurophysiologist, the biophysical bent. And he was interested in hyperkinetic animal models for the human disease. You know, these hyperactive children? Well, he had he was interested in this, studying this model in the dog. So he had a bunch of dogs in one floor of this psychiatric hospital. And one day, the patients apparently heard the dogs barking and asked, can we go down and see the dogs? Well, his first reaction was, he's got plenty to do, and he didn't want to really monkey with them because he had his research and he was very busy with it. But I guess he told his wife about it, and his wife's also a scientist, and she says, well, why not? And so they made arrangements with the psychiatrist on a few selected patients, the ones that were going down the tubes, like Sonny. I think Sonny was 19. He just laid in bed. He refused any therapy, communicated with no one. He was laid in bed. He wasn't agree to any kind of therapy, and I guess they'd given some drugs with no effect. And one day they brought him in Arvin. Arvin was a wire-haired terrier, and they're aggressive lovers, probably like some of you. And old Arvin jumped up on the bed and started licking Sonny. And he kind of reacted to this. And he was kind of playing with him just a little bit, some indication of interest in him. And then Arvin, he had some other people to see, so he jumped off the bed and went running down the aisle, and old Sonny jumped out of bed and ran after him. Well, there again, to make a long story short, he was discharged within a couple of months. And this facilitated his therapy. And that's why I say it's not pet therapy, but pet facilitated therapy. He responded then to some therapy, agreed to a certain regimen of therapy. And this story was repeated with many others. This particular girl here, she was in terrible shape. She was a epileptic schizophrenic, as I recall. And she was
almost dwell.
She didn't respond to anything. I think they give her about 26 shock treatments and a whole bunch of therapy, and nothing really happened. And then they brought in this dog, and 6 days after they brought in the dog, she had sort of remarkable progress. And I think she was discharged a week after that. So you have these remarkable results with this kind of thing. And I know when I visited my friend John Markestead, he wanted to, when I was speaking at an all-losing conference in Anchorage here last fall, and John Markestead wanted me to invite me up to the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, where he's a part-time chaplain, and he was showing me this institute, and we got into the sort of day room there, and there was Princess lying on the floor just by the door to the backyard. And he says, "This is Princess. This is our most important therapeutic agent." It was a white husky female, husky dog. And it was the contact for them with some of these patients coming in. They couldn't communicate with them, but they'd communicate with his dog. They'd take it out, feed it, play with it. And that was then the opening for them to do something with them that could be helpful. Autistic children and others were greatly helped by this kind of therapy. It also reminds me what Dr. Corson did. He ran out of money for this program. He could not get funding to continue it. And finally, the director of the hospital there said, "By next weekend, you got to have these dogs out of here." Well, he got, I don't know whether he got on television, but he advertised it, and there was an enlightened owner of a retirement home down the pike that said, he was kind of interested, so he came up and talked to Sam Corson about it, and he got pretty excited about it, and he went back home, and that was on Friday. He poured the cement and built the runs on Saturday, and they brought in the dogs on Sunday. And it was also a convalescent kind of setup, as I recall. And these dogs had a fantastic effect on many of those patients. A lot of them who were sort of bickering and not getting along at all. It's kind of harder to fight if you're sharing a dog, or if you each got one and they're kind of friendly. And they were out and they'd take them out for walks, and they met a lot of people, of course, out for walks with their dogs, and they'd get into conversation. And really, it was a very therapeutic thing, and they became very excited about it. The most remarkable incident that happened in this hospital was with a fellow who's 82 years old. He had come there in his late 50s. He'd had an accident, and he was essentially non-communicative. I guess about anybody there could not remember having had any conversation of any kind with him. And one day they brought in a dog and visited him. And about the first words that any of them had heard him say was, "You brought me a dog." And his next words were, "Can I keep him?" And so he kept him. And this was his contact back to the real world. He began tracing pictures of dogs that he would find. And then he began freehand drawing of them. And now if you go to that hospital, you will see a whole wall with pictures of freehand, very fine-looking dogs. And he's back communicating. He's back in the world after having been out of it for over 20 years. And it's kind of tragic if you think about it. Had we been wiser sooner, he would have had a much better life longer. And so it goes. Now, I would like to, I just wrote to a, and I'm collecting up material wherever I can get it, and visiting many places. One of the places I visited, for example, is up in Bigestolen, up on the Valdres in Norway. And there is a fellow named Erling Stordal operates. He himself is blind. He has set up a place there where they teach the blind to ski. They take anybody that's disadvantaged there, as many as they can handle. They use a lot of physiotherapy, but two of their chief agents of therapy are the horses and the dogs. And the horses, of course, are very good to teach balance as you ride them, and the dogs in therapy. And I've been using them for quite a time. But I'd like to read you a little bit of the letter from the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Mental Retardation from the Lima State Hospital, also in Ohio. And he is responding to my letter. He said, our pet facilitated therapy program has now been in full implementation for approximately 3.5 years. Those of us who have been directly involved in this particular program definitely see that it is an excellent form of therapy, especially for depressed and suicidal patients. We're a very large institution, and prior to the implementation of the pet therapy program, we were finding that loneliness, depression, hopelessness, boredom, and low self-esteem were characteristically shared by many of the residents. We found that with a lot of hard work, especially in the beginning of the program, using pets could be developed to the point where now it practically runs itself, with the exception of our close monitoring system. We feel that possibly it could be a very valuable program in many institutions. And I want to read you a newspaper clipping. It says, it all started with a sparrow. And this is in Lima, Ohio. One day, a wounded sparrow fluttered into the turn-of-the-century fortress of the Lima State Hospital for the criminally insane and founded a new therapy program. Patients in one ward adopted the sick bird. They sneaked it into the closet when attendance decreed it had to go. Social worker Dave Lee joined the conspiracy. Lee noticed that the men who had been bored and despondent were now busy catching insects and tending to the sparrow. The patients worked together and began talking to him, a fellow conspirator, openly. This fellow Lee, Dave Lee, is the fellow that wrote this letter to me. He's the fellow I communicated with. Well, that was the start of the pet program 3 years ago. Today, 130 canaries and assorted birds, hamsters, gerbils, fish, and rabbits are teaching the hospital's 400 patients about responsibility, affection, and interaction. It's worked out just great, said Lee. He sees the hospital as an especially important model. That is among the few institutions of any kind to use pets this way. And I was so happy to see this because you like to see your suggestions come true. And several years ago, I wrote an article about where I saw the pets should be utilized. And one of the places I said are in prison. We have all the rapists from what used to be death row here, the baddest actors in the state. See, if it works here, it's got to work other places. A few problems have occurred. Not one animal, however, has been hurt, Lee said. At first, we were more worried about the animals than the patients because it would only take one episode of abuse and we'd be out. He said larger animals, such as cats and dogs, have been ruled out because of the number of sex offenders of Lima and the risk of a hazard to them. One opener footage board is also kept to pet-free for allergic patients. In this regard, you have to be careful about it because some people have allergy to some animals, not necessarily to all. Some inmates are psychopaths. Many have a history of animal abuse, but they have become intentionally protective of the pets. We had a guy blow up a while back, Lee said, really blow up. He overpowered two attendants, ripped the phone out of the wall, turned over a pool table. The other patients all gathered around the ward aquarium and the ward birdcage. When they finally stopped the guy, only two things were left in the ward, the aquarium and the birdcage. One pet has been killed, Lee said. A patient scheduled to return to prison after treatment was told he could not take his parakeet. He packed it and the bird suffocated because he tried to take it with him. Usually pets are turned over to a buddy or a relative when patients leave the hospital. If a guy loses and has to go to the strong ward, a buddy will watch the pet till he comes back. And this is a real success story. And it's helping out these people very much. And he goes on in the letter saying, giving all the reasons that they have found that it works. And I won't go into all of these now, but they found almost immediately that the care of various pets housed here at their Lima State Hospital brought immediately a responsibility in these patients themselves, so that they were responsible for the pets, took great interest in them, and took very good care of them. And they also found that the residents learned that they were needed and accepted by other living creatures. and that they soon learned that the pet would depend on them for food, shelter, and affection, and all, and their overall survival. So it gave them a really reason for being there. And they looked on the dog. They weren't like the attendants or the therapists, because they would ask nothing in return. They would not nag or disapprove or make impossible demands of them. Animals don't do that. Chief has a dog named Charlie. And Chief may be gone all day. And maybe she'll come home at 6:30 in the evening. Now, Charlie knows and Chief knows that Charlie always gets fed at 5 in the afternoon. She comes maybe dragging in at 6:30. Does Charlie meet her at the door and bite her? And believe he doesn't. He's happier than ever to see her. Now, if that was me, she'd probably have to look out for a bite. But that's the way they are. Or if you've had a bad day, and boy, you're really wheeled off, and you come home, and you open the door, and some cocker scandal jumps up on you and greets you happily, it's pretty hard to go around biting other people. It just works that way. And they also found that these were a very valuable learning experience for the people there. Not only the patient, but also the people that were taking care of them. And during their first year of pet therapy, they noticed that it had a calming effect on the whole ward. And they were also able to find that the use of pets in the hospital helped some of the residents to learn respect for more than just their own way of life. And they also found that using pets could occupy the patient's attention and lessen the anxiety among them. And that's just a few of the benefits that they realized. I had another letter recently, kind of a new approach on this thing, from a lady named Mary Kirkendall from Portland, Oregon. And you probably saw some of the headlines on it. Orman was a crippled pigeon, and he became a great therapeutic agent. Her husband is confined to a wheelchair and he plays the piano, and Orman helps him play the piano. He kind of runs up and down, and he parks on other people's shoulders and generally jolly sings up generally. So he's doing a great job there. But she also told me another very interesting story about Vanya, a Russian wolfhound. And this Russian wolfhound had been the subject of great mistreatment. It was in very bad shape, as bad as some of these patients in some of these psychiatric hospitals. He had been rescued from a home of abuse. It was malnourished, and they thought that it probably had permanent brain damage, but they weren't sure. It was essentially autistic. It just curled up in a rigid bag of bones, and it was responsible for nothing for hours at a time. And what they did, they brought it into this hospital for emotionally disturbed girls. In fact, there were about 36 of them there. And Vanya then was the social worker. His dog was the challenge to them. They were all supposed to help this dog get well again. And they kept records on it and tried various forms of therapy to bring it back to a well dog. And the ultimate goal was to be able to get it well enough so they could place it in a home. And they in fact did rehabilitate it, so it became a normal dog in full flesh. It became a happy dog, and it was of course a great therapy for the girls, the very emotionally disturbed girls, that they were able to do this. So that's another approach to this kind of thing. Now, I'll see what I got up here for some more slides. I mentioned these regulations. This is a slide I just did. It says the EPA has made it legal for him to go to the bathroom. Well, we do have a lot of crazy laws, like dogs, if you bring them in, or cats, or any animal, they're going to be a source of disease for all the patients. Well, if you're careful about the selection of the animals, and take good care of them, and also look not only at the animal you're bringing in, but also at the patient's allergies. You will be able to use these, I think, with great effect. And I think we should work, and I hope you'll work, wherever you are, towards making it possible for these animals to gain entry into some of these places where they should be put, and I'll list some of these in a little while. In this regard, I think it's also, and what I'd like to do, and one of the things I'd like to get somebody working on, is to be able to classify the dogs and the cats, but mainly starting in with the dogs because they're used in so many areas. We do not now have a good profile of the various dogs. Now, of course, we did a little bit of this work. He tried to select his patient and the dogs to match the patient so it would be most effective. I am also interested in the dog in this case, because I think with some patients, if you pick the wrong dog, they might drive the dog bananas. And that isn't fair either. So you'd have a psychotic dog. So you've got to get a stable dog to match up. Another area, it isn't only dogs and cats that can be utilized. There was a study in Yorkshire in England where they had all these patients older patients in a hospital. And so they set up a rather well-defined study to see, all right, here's the control group here, and we will do anything for that. And they have to answer a questionnaire before and after this trial program. But they weren't going to get anything. This group here, and they were randomly selected, were given plants. And then they took this group and gave them budgerigars, the Australian parrot. And then after a period of time, they went back to a questionnaire to see how their outlook on life was and a lot of psychological questions that people in that business do. And they found out that, of course, there's nothing much happened to this group over here that had nothing. The people with plants showed more interest in life and were considerably improved on their general attitude. Those with these Australian parrots, they were way up there. They were in great form. They had a great experience. Now, this was a bit biased in a way, because when you have budgerigars, when you have Australian parrots, some of them talk, and they'll repeat certain words, and as a result of this, when you have this kind of an animal, you'll get quite a few children coming to visit you. And that in itself is therapeutic. So, it was a successful experiment, no matter what the reasons were, I guess, for the great effect of this. Now, as to the kind of pet you select, people, as I said, have gone ape about animals, and this happens to be an ape. It's a white-handed gibbon, Hylobates laevis. And he's a friend of mine. His name is Judith. He's 11 years old now, and he was a pet all his life. In the South Pacific, in Bangkok, in China, these were historically been used a great deal for pets. I do not recommend any non-human primate as a pet for anybody. They've torn up more houses and broken up more homes than you can shake a stick at. It is not a wise plan to have them or any wild animal as a pet. I discourage this completely. There are a lot of other animals you can select as pets that make very good pets. And this isn't one of them, even though they're very beautiful. Birds are, I think, I've already mentioned the Australian parrot to you. Canaries, a lot of these animals give a lot of comfort to a lot of people, and especially those who are in a situation where you can't take a dog out for walking every day, or you have a problem on the feeding with the cats, they would be a cheaper investment and also a very helpful one and a great source of comfort. Goats, as I mentioned to some of you the other night, when I get to be dictator, every family will have a miniature goat. These are miniature goats, originally from the Cameroon. Because here you have something, as we look ahead at an energy crisis, that's why I promote them. Because they can mow your lawn, they can fertilize the garden, you can get milk from them, They're great playmates for the children. You can train them to a cart and harness. They play all kinds of games. They'll teach your children how to king of the mountain, as I told somebody last night. And they just do a lot of great things. And then when they get old, you can kill them and eat them. I had goat and made jerky out of it, and I enjoyed that goat for a long time after it died. Every time I ate the jerky, I thought of the great times I had with it too. So that's why I recommend goats is really a great thing, and they also attract interesting goat herders. The one I'm really going to push later is a pig. A pig is probably one of the great pets of all time. This happens to be a pet. You see a monkey riding a harness. This particular pig is trained also to give kids piggyback rides. it's a great performer. But we got to wait. You got to give us a little more time. I've spent part of my life developing string miniature swine. Now, some friends of mine have also a friend of mine named Martha. Martha is 2.5 years old now. She's a pig. And she only weighs 65 pounds. She's expecting her third litter. She has already had 2 litters, 60 each. And they're doing very well. Upstanding little pigs. She, as I said, only weighs 65 pounds, which is truly remarkable. We'd like to get them down to about 40. And then they can be what a goat is. They're great playmates. They fix on you and they'll go with you. They can also do better than a goat. They can dig bones up for you if you're interested in anthropology. I think they have such a good nose. They have no better nose probably than a dog. They can hunt truffles. They can if you're interested in bird hunting, they can also do that. They're better than a dog because when they get old, you can kill them and eat them, and so enjoy them in death as much as in life. So I give them a very high grade, and they learn very quickly. They learn very quickly, and since some of you have already heard my pig story on how well they perform, I'll put that off until the end. This is the kind of pig that Martha is. She's on Fort Collins now. And with Martha, you can just call Martha. Hey, Martha, Martha! And if she's 100 yards away, she'll come running right up and to be petted. I send her a birthday card every year. Here she is, all dressed up. And also, as far as learning how to operate things, you probably saw this in National Geographic. On a hot day, the pig is trained, because the pig doesn't cool. It doesn't have a good apparatus for cooling unless you give it a cool place to be. Otherwise, it'll go in the mud. If you give it a clean place, it'll keep very clean. This particular pig is trained so that when it gets hot, it goes up to the sprinkler and gets cooled off. And they'll learn that very quickly. And of course, they become very famous. The most famous pig at the present time is Miss Piggy. She plays before 260 million people in 100 countries every week. And she's great if you haven't seen it on the Muppet Show. It's about the only television program I watch. Pigs in space and things like that. It's really great. So they're really a beautiful creature. And if we can get one about this size, when I get to be dictator, they'll either have a pig or a goat. And although they haven't used it much in therapy yet, they'll be, I'm sure, really great for therapy. Both for the physical well-being and also the psychic well-being. So I think that's all, isn't it? Yeah, I think so. It's such a good story. I got to share with you this story because some of you know Carol Hinderly. I'm the kind of person that they send me birth announcements for animals, and they send me animal stories. And somebody I told it to you the other night, somebody are new here. This Iowa farmer had a lot of pigs, and one of his sows died.
after she had eaten the lunch.
Oh, I don't know if you want this on tape or not. Yeah, this joke by Carol Ingley. He said it to me, and I'm sure it really happened. This sow died just after it had eight little pigs, and seven of the eight pigs died, and they saved one. And there's a lot of people do. You take the pig inside. As Martha. Martha is from a source of Yucatan pigs down Yucatan Peninsula. And they live with people in Yucatan, in Mexico. That's why they're so prosperous. But anyway, on this pig, it got to be a pet. And when it got bigger, it rode around with the farmer in his pickup, around the farm. And one day he had to go to town, and he had the pig in the front seat with him, and they were rolling down the highway, and suddenly met a state patrolman. And the state patrolman saw the driver, and he had him look over there, and the pig sitting up there alongside of him, big with life, and enjoying the ride. And the cop almost drove off the road. And he swung around and turned on the blinker and sirened him down and said, walked up to him and said, "No, I don't know of any law that says you can't have a pig in the front seat of a pickup. But you almost caused me to reckon, I'm sure you know it's a hazard. You're driving down the road with a pig in the front seat." He says, "Why don't you take him to a zoo?" So the farmer drove up. And 2 weeks later, farmer was out again, pig in the front seat, driving down the road, met the same policeman. And he caught sight of him too. He swung around, turned on the blinker, sirened him down, and came up to him and he says, "You're the same guy I saw 2 weeks ago." He says, "I thought I told you to take that pig to the zoo." The old farmer says, I did, and we had such a good time, he's going to the ball game now. I told the people here the other night, anything good from a pig, people either use another name or something. And one of the examples I used, and some of the people there, and I was wearing it tonight, I was wearing what a lot of people call hush puppies. They're really hush piggies, because they're made out of pigskin. The most comfortable shoe going. So when you, from here on out, when you go and buy shoes, a real comfortable one, you don't ask for hush puppies. You ask for hush piggies. Give him credit where credit is due. I usually wear buttons for this. This happens to be take a frog out to lunch. Had that the other night. And this is a pig on a psychiatrist's couch, and it says, "Nobody understands me." And that's true. Not enough people understand pigs. Otherwise, we'd be further along. So what have I tried to tell you? I summarized this a while back. On where I think they could be utilized, and I think one of the great utilizations of pets is in retirement convalescent homes, in private homes for the aging and for lonely people, in their own homes to keep them independent longer, for institutions for handicapped people, and we found it really works there, for hospitals, including those for the criminally insane, and especially in the regular hospitals, especially in the children's wards. If not in contact with them, at least so it's visible before them. And in prisons, and I already mentioned that. And also, when I get to be dictator, we're going to have in the dormitories, living establishments, in colleges and universities. We'll have a pet dog and a pet cat, and maybe a bird in there, in every dormitory. A lot of the students come to the university, and they've had to leave their favorite dog and cat at home, or whatever it might be. And this gives them, everybody needs a warm fuzzy. And really, if you look back in history, man has had an animal companion since prehistoric times. And we are the poorer for it, to the extent that we have been separated from them. I maintain that, and I can defend that position. And we get into the cities, and all we see is people, and no animals, or the animals are badly treated. And we're going to change this. And I hope you help us. Why? Because animals give us physical, tactile comfort. They flatter us and make us feel important. They encourage us to be ourselves, to drop our facades. If you see a person alone with an animal, you know, they're not trying to wear a facade or be something they're not. They pretty much, it's interesting to watch, in fact. They give us security, especially at night. They boost our egos and compensate for our weaknesses. They relieve our hostilities. They play, and in play aid children in fantasizing. They act as mediators and go-between between people and with people. They are especially supportive to the old and the lonely, and that's the reasons. I could probably give you some more, but the time is up. Appreciate your attention, and now you know what the assignment is.